Welcome back. Chunky's coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 here in the DMV. 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM in Richmond. Streaming live on the free Odyssey app, and you can watch us on the Monumental Sports Network. Brought to you by our friends at Crop Metcalf. They're the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. It's Bish, EB, and JP. Cakes in Vegas. He has survived 2 days at the World Series of Poker. He is set to call us right around 9:45. So we'll get an update from Cakes in Vegas. But join us right now to talk about the Nationals' moves, firing both Davey Martinez and Mike Rizzo. It's Chelsea Janes from the Washington Post, National Major League Baseball writer. Hey, Chelsea.
Hey, how are you guys?
So how expected was it from your point of view that they would dismiss both Davey and Rizzo?
I'll be honest, I was blown away. I was not blown away because I thought, you know, Rizzo and Davey should keep their jobs forever. I was blown away because it was so decisive. It's just not the kind of thing we've seen the Learners do ever. So to kind of have that come down the way it did and, you know, require them to presumably put in the effort of finding new people for those roles and paying them, it's stunning to me. So yeah, I was blown away.
Well, is there any indication that it was a deal where they kind of insisted that that Mike fired Davey and he's like, no, I'm not going to do it. So then they do both. Any indication that that was the case?
No indication of that yet. You know, I think the Rizzo part of the move is still a little bit of a mystery. I think we'll kind of slowly figure it out, you know, what the decision-making was there. Obviously it's very hard to know what the Learners are thinking at any time. So, you know, still kind of trying to get there. You know, I think there's a logic to it just in the fact that if they had decided that Rizzo was not going to be the guy next year, they didn't want to pick up the option. I think it is justifiable to decide to let somebody else make a huge pick like they have next week. So, you know, that also could have played into it.
Yeah, and it did become apparent, at least to me anyway, I think probably to a lot of people, that they kind of did become tied to the hip, right? Davey and Mike. And Mike had pointed out here that he had hired managers and fired managers, fired guys that he really liked. But there just did become a point there where Davey and Mike kind of seemed, their fates were kind of be sealed together with these, you know, these sort of every other year contract, you know. I thought it was kind of embarrassing, these little, you know, Mike Rizzo has to go in every other year and beg for a contract. But that's kind of the way they ran the operation. And it did seem like they were kind of tied together.
I think so. I think if only because it never seemed, at least in the last few years, that firing one would change the direction of the organization. You know, I think there was definitely a justification to let Davey go just with the way they've been playing this year. I think they've looked sloppy. You know, I think there's not been a lot of urgency evident there, and you know that may or may not be related to Davey, you know, but I do think maybe a new voice for some of these young guys who've never had one made a lot of sense. But you know, on the Rizzo front, it just seemed like a new voice in the clubhouse wasn't going to fix what they really needed, which is probably kind of a recalibration of the entire organization. So you know, I think in that way they kind of were tied at the hip because it was pretty hard to justify, you know, at least for me, at least for us sitting out here, you know, in our logical way of thinking, it seemed hard to justify doing just one and saying, oh, that'll fix it. But the thing that always made it seem possible is that the Learners have not operated with the logic that we would expect at times. So I think that's why this is so surprising, is because it kind of makes sense in a way.
Right.
Chelsea,
it kind of does.
You just used the term the Learners. And when we talk about ownership, that's the term we always throw out, the Learners. Now, Mark Lerner is the chairman or whatever his title is. But fill me in a little bit more, because I don't have a great picture of, like, who's in the office? Are they running day-to-day operations? It seems quite nebulous.
It is. And, you know, we've been kind of trying to nail that down a little bit, too. You know, my colleagues, Darius Faluga, who you obviously know, and Andrew Golden and Spencer Nussbaum, we've been kind of talking to people about this. And what it seems like, you know, it's kind of what we knew, right? You know, Mark Lerner is nominally the chairperson of this. Alan Gottlieb is another in-law of the family, and he kind of does the people interactions in the room, you know, when it comes to, for instance, telling, you know, Riz and Davey that they were gone. Ed Cohen is another longtime member of this group. He's been around forever. He attends the owners meetings for them right now. He's kind of the guy that says yes or no on, you know, the big decisions. You know, and then there's, you know, kind of a few others that are around the periphery, and they all have to agree, and often they don't. And that's why you see this stasis that the Nats have been in. So for that group to kind of come to this conclusion, I think probably took a long time. But exactly who looked at this and said, we've got to make a change, is still not clear. But I will say it wouldn't have happened if they hadn't all agreed. And that is something we haven't seen them do, you know, even on things as simple as the jersey patch until lately. So clearly there was some, you know, I don't know if it was embarrassment over kind of the press they've been getting or what it is, but there was clearly some consensus in the room that something needed to change, which, you know, at least means they've been paying attention.
Chelsea, what about the timing of this? Because they wouldn't make a move after an 11-game losing streak, and that's an embarrassing thing. I mean, to lose 11 games, almost get swept by the Rockies at home.
Yeah.
So the timing is interesting to me because they didn't fire these guys during that streak. Then they go out west, and then they come home and play the Tigers. All right, so they played some really good teams. They went 7-6 in those 13 games. Yeah. They won the last two series. They won the series against the Tigers. The Tigers are going to have the best record in the American League, probably. They currently do. So what if they would have won 2 out of 3 against Boston? Would they have made a move, or did they already have it in their mind, you think, that they were going to make this change?
I'm reluctant to assign much long-term strategy to this ownership group. I'd be surprised if they were in the losing streak and said, hey, let's target July and, you know, right before July instead. You know, I think they just decide when they decide. I might be proven wrong. We don't know. That's just me speculating. One of the things that stands out to me about this timing is A, the proximity to the deadline to pick up the option. You know, the deadline was, you know, mid-July. And so, you know, I think that probably forced their hand in a way that the losing streak didn't. I also think, and no one has told me this, you know, the Nats aren't going to be home again until after the All-Star break. So there's a 2-week period now where there's no one in that room that's going to have to answer to local media in any way for 2 weeks. Like, I think that is helpful to them. I think that's appealing. You know, the Nats go on the road and then they're off and, you know, the dust will have settled by then. So that might be part of it. You know, the thing I kind of wish they had thought through a little bit differently and maybe even just pushed this back till today was, you know, Mackenzie Gore and James Wood are first-time All-Stars, and the story of their day was their manager and general manager getting fired. So, you know, from that perspective, it was a little jarring. But
yeah, right.
But yeah, I don't think there was like a long-term plan. I think probably the deadline just forced their hand.
Is a sell-off likely coming at the trade deadline?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, what I know of Mike DiBartolo, who's going to be the interim GM, you know, I think he's very logical. I think he'll do what the numbers say. I think it'll be fascinating. You know, I say that, like, I'm sure a sell-off isn't necessarily what everyone wanted to see, but I think there's reason to believe that, A, you know, it's the right move, first of all, and B, that it'll be done well. You know, he's obviously never had to kind of orchestrate trades or anything, but it's a different voice. It's a guy who's sort of been waiting for his chance, and I think he will do the things that make the most sense. You know, whether he'll be able to execute the kind of trades that Riz did, you know, I don't know that anyone does, but I think they'll do a sell-off, and I think that'll probably be the right move at this point.
How attractive is this job? You know, normally you'd say, oh, Nation's Capital, won a World Series in 2019, but, you know, if you don't have a firm commitment from ownership over the last 4 or 5 years to sort of even be paying attention, as you kind of say, you know, who can they reasonably expect to attract that's of a high quality?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of telling that the one thing we have from Riz so far is, you know, I navigated that ownership group for 20 years.
What a
you know?
Quote. Yeah. What a quote.
Yeah, you knew it was coming. You know, he's kept his mouth shut for a really long time, to his credit. But, you know, I was thinking about that and just kind of putting out feelers. I think we sometimes underestimate the, you know, the importance of like 30 jobs. You know, it's one of 30.
Sure.
So I think it's attractive. I think you're going to have people be interested. Whether that interest continues when they talk to the family about, you know, the direction of the team, I don't know. Whether the family will be looking externally at all, I don't know. You know, I think there's comfort with Mike DiBartolo, and I think often, you know, he's not going to make as much as some of the names that would be available. So I obviously think that will matter. But, yeah, I think it's an attractive job. I think people know how they operate now. You know, they know what to expect. They know, you know, the guy that won them a World Series was still living year-to-year contract-wise, so I wouldn't expect someone to come in and experience anything differently. But I think the job will be attractive, but I think everyone will come in, you know, eyes wide open.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that whenever they name the interim manager, it's going to be someone from the minors?
I don't know. I was kind of guessing Miguel Cairo, the bench coach, just for now. Uh-huh. But no one's told me that either. It just makes a lot of sense. I don't know. But that'll be interesting, too. I mean, the thing that I'm most interested in is, like, will interims just become default figures moving forward because it's easier? So
right.
I do think it really matters who they pick because the path of least resistance is always so appealing to them. But yeah, I think it could be Cairo. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think he's, you know, sort of a perfectly experienced interim voice, but not necessarily a change, you know? So, yeah. So that's that.
You make a good point though, about the fact that Wood, who's having an unbelievable year,
mm-hmm.
and Gore. And Mac, getting into the All-Star game as reserves, and this completely overshadows it. I mean, these are the two young stars, two of the three young stars of this team.
I mean, do you think those guys care, though?
Probably not.
Wood probably doesn't care.
I'm sure. You're right. Yeah. You're right. That's why the timing is just, it's confusing to me. That's all.
Yeah.
I think they notice, you know, I think people will notice because it's not hard to kind of wait a day. Mm-hmm. But no, I mean, like, I think Gore, for example, who I'm sure you guys are pretty familiar with, like, the competitiveness there is probably just kind of, probably eager to have things go in a different direction. So ultimately, no, but it's just one of those feel things that right. stands out, you know.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think when Davey made those comments, and then we had heard, you know, that the from sort of the front office side that it wasn't really a big deal in the clubhouse, that the players understood where he was coming from, and he's always been a player's guy, and the player, you know, players didn't hold that against him. Was that true, or was that not true? Was that spin?
I don't think it. I think players noticed. I know players noticed. I don't think it meaningfully changed the relationship between them and Davey because I don't think that was. I don't think it was a weak relationship. I think everyone really liked Davey. You guys know him. He's mm-hmm. you know, as friendly and caring as they come. I just don't think he was inspiring them at this point. You know, I don't think there was. Yeah, I don't think they were kind of rallying around him in any way. And I don't think you always have to rally around the manager, right? But I think with a young team, that's probably what they need right now. So I don't think it, like, made anyone say, you know, screw this guy, I'm not going to try anymore. But I definitely think it was a sign of sort of, I don't know, it just, you know, the fact that it wasn't as strong a relationship as you probably want between a really young clubhouse needing leadership and the guy, you know, at the forefront.
What is your guess on the impact on the draft with this? Because my understanding, the way it was kind of described to us is, you know, Mike's not out there, you know, on, you know, beating down, doing 5,000 miles a year, you know, scouting all these guys, right? He's getting the reports. He's going probably more often than not on the recommendations of his guys. Those are still his guys going to make the picks, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm curious because I don't know if they know what the impact will be. You know, I think Mike DiBartolo is obviously in charge now. I would expect from what I know of him, for him to listen to the people that have been doing all those miles and stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I do think that in the case of this particular pick, it was going to have to be a Riz pick. You know, I don't think he was going to let somebody talk him into anything. And what mm-hmm. we know of Riz picks is, you know, he probably wanted a pitcher, he probably wanted a college pitcher, and he probably wanted someone that could get to the majors quickly. That was sort of how I was thinking about it, because that's his track record, and that's kind of where they are as an organization. I don't know that putting someone else in charge changes that, but I do think, you know, that the guys who've been really thinking about this for months will be the guys that make the pick now. It might not change anything, but I do think it makes it a little bit more of an unknown, even though it was already, you know, somewhat up in the air. Mm-hmm.
I'm curious,
mind.
What were your preseason expectations for this team?
How many wins? 70 to 73-ish?
Somewhere. Yeah, I think I, you know, we do those predictions every year, and I think I said something in that range. I thought they'd be better because they should be better, because they're the same as they were last year with, you know, an MVP materializing before their eyes and Mackenzie Gore striking out a ton of people and, you know, CJ having a good year. Like, they should be better.
It's crazy how quickly it all fell apart. Like, obviously, it was an up and down uneven season before the swoon, but you know, they were 30-32, 30-33, whatever the hell it was. And I remember thinking, okay, you know, here is the promise there. And then the bottom falls out completely. Yeah. It's kind of stunning how quickly it happened in my mind.
The bats died. The bullpen's been awful all year. Chelsea, you know that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Then the bats died at the wrong time over that 11-game stretch when they were playing bad teams that they should have beaten.
Here's what I'll say. And I have a lot of respect for Davey and Rizzo.
Yeah.
They've treated me really well over the years.
Yeah.
But I watched the Tigers come in last week as a team that traded away people at last year's deadline and somehow made the playoffs. And the difference between the way that team is run day to day and the way the Nationals are run day to day is jarring.
What did you notice? What did you notice?
Attention to detail, number one. You know, just collective buy-in. I don't think, and I, you know, maybe it was too early to expect this, but I just don't think the clubhouse expected to win. And I don't think they held themselves to that standard. Like, I'm not saying I think they're happy when they lose. I just think that a lot of them are still really happy to be there. You know, I think Mackenzie Gore probably does not fall into that category. I think he was probably pretty frustrated. You know, I think a guy like Dylan Cruz, when he gets back, is always going to want to win. But I did not sense that this was a group. If they had taken the next step and really taken off this year, that would have been pure luck. It's not because they're pushing advantages. It's not because there's this, you know, rallying in the clubhouse around, hey, we can surprise people. It's not because they're doing something differently. It's because they took off. Whereas the Tigers, I feel like, make a lot of their own luck. They're very detailed on the bases. They are, you know, talking every day about what went wrong on this play, what went wrong on this play. You know, their defensive positioning is down to the inch, basically. Like, everything is okay. We're going to do everything we can to get every little advantage to try to win a game. And I think that's why they were able to take off the way they were and develop the way they were at the big league level. And it just wasn't there with the Nats. It just seemed very, I don't know. I don't want to say hands off, because I think the coaching staff really cares, but they did not create change. And I think that's, you know, what you're seeing.
So that was your vibe. And then the Nats scored 20 runs in two games, in the last two games of the series against them.
Right. And the inconsistency is a perfect example of what I'm talking about, right? Like, it's there.
Right.
But I don't think the Nats have done anything to make sure it's consistent. I don't think they game plan. If they, you know, I think they game plan, but it's not sticking with some of these guys. Like, I just think there has to be a greater sense of urgency. Like, we have to win. And if we're not going to win, you're going to sit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's kind of the thing I did not feel that is noticeable in other places.
Great stuff, Chelsea. It's Chelsea James from the Washington Post. Thanks.
Thank you, Chelsea. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Coming up a little later, we'll talk to her colleague, Barry Zwerluga from the Washington Post, who was texting with Mike Rizzo yesterday. That came out in the Washington Post. So we'll talk to Barry at 9 o'clock here on the Junkies. Welcome back. Junkies coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980. We're going to get an update from Johnny Cakes Auville, who's in Vegas for the World Series of Poker. He's advanced 2 days and has over $250,000 in chips. Apparently, he started with 60. And if you look at the leaderboard, look, there's 9,800 people, according to Jason, who are playing in this year's World Series of Poker. Cakes is 267th.
Yeah, I mean, and
seems like it's pretty good.
I wouldn't get too caught up in the place. Just be ahead of, be at least at average chip stack or better in a perfect world. And he is. Which is amazing. He's showing tremendous patience. So he's doing great.
It's nice when you flop a boat and the other guy has two pair and he either called him on all in or went all in and he took all his chips.
Yeah, that really helped. He had two double ups that were big, it appears, from the outside looking in.
And that's
in.
What you need, man. You need the cards to go your way for a couple times. Just get a nice little cushion.
He did a really good job, too, it appears, on day one. He can talk about it. Of just treading water, because He was just like hovering around his starting stack the whole time, but he never got like low or anything. He just was like kind of hovering around that 60,000, and you're just wondering if he's ever going to get anything going, and boom, he's had a couple double ups. Now he's got some confidence. Now it also gives him a little more bully power. He can pick his spots a little bit more, so it gives him a little more flexibility. He's doing great, man.
Yeah, really happy I can't wait to hear.
Really happy for him.
And I wonder, so today, what time does it usually start? Does it start around noontime?
I don't know.
11 or 12 or something
probably,
like that?
Probably something like that.
Yeah.
And I don't even know what time they end. Do they end about midnight, maybe?
We'll have to ask.
Yeah. But he's been doing a great job with the updates, too, so make sure you follow him. Obviously, follow Junkies Radio, but follow Money Metal Cakes. He's doing a great job with that, so... Been fine. I know my wife is like locked in. She's like sending me updates. I'm out hitting balls, or I'm out, and she's like sending me, "Oh, he doubled up," or whatever. She's really actively
following the dream.
Yeah, she's locked in on it.
Oh, I wanted to tell you real quick. This is kind of just funny coincidence. Just because you guys were Terps, and I'm still a 49er fan, but I used to be a huge 49er fan. Mm-hmm. But my daughter and her friends were hanging out with this former Terp on July 4th, who played at Maryland and San Francisco.
Vernon Davis.
Bingo.
Yeah.
VD.
Mm-hmm.
She was hanging out with VD, and I think one of his friends kind of knew one of my daughter's friends. That was the connection. Mm-hmm. But hung out with them all night at a bar. She said he was awesome. Bought everybody drinks.
Was he buying everybody drinks?
Oh, yeah. I bought everybody drinks. And he was there with another former Terp that played in the league, but she only knew his first name. It was Robert, but I didn't know the last name. Mm-hmm. But anyway, she was hanging out with Vernon Davis.
Nice.
On July 4th.
And she had a great time?
She said he was great. He was awesome.
These guys were telling me about all the boozing they were doing. They were swearing that if I was with them, I would have fallen off the wagon for 100% sure.
Your run would have ended on Thursday night.
Uh-huh. Because you guys would have insisted. You wouldn't have respected my desire to be clean for a few days.
And if Jason liked us, he could have came out, too.
Where were you? Oh, you were in Rested. Were you at Open Road?
We did not go to Open Road Thursday night. We went to Jackson's.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. All right.
Classic spot.
Shut it down.
right there. Isn't that where Haynesworth would have been hanging out? I think Albert Haynesworth
is hanging out there. I see why he went there a lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot of... A lot of women.
A lot of cougs.
On the second tour of duty.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Perfect.
Yeah, Mike was loving it. The boys were loving it.
I bet he was.
Yeah.
What made you guys decide to go out together? It's not an everyday thing. Guys really bonded on the golf thing, huh?
Well, Mar, I took Mar to Hidden Creek on Thursday as my guest, and then he suggested that we go out afterwards. And I said, well, if we get drab out, I'll go out with you afterwards. And Mar laid the foundation for it. He invited Drab. Drab was checking in on us when we were like on hole 16. Mm-hmm. And then he wanted to go out. And I said, well, we're going. The boys are going out. And we get there. And it's just so funny. Mar is relentless.
With chicks?
Yes, when hitting on girls. Uh-huh. I love it.
That's so great.
He has no fear.
That's really good, dude.
He has no fear.
That bodes well for your future.
Yeah, I was punching so far out of my weight class on Thursday. I mean, the amount of rockets I went up to that were like, 12 out of 10.
Right.
I mean, I work too hard to not shoot. Yeah. I'd rather miss 1,000 shots than, stop shooting.
All right. Yeah. He was absolutely hammered, though.
Oh, right.
At 5
Shocker.
P.M. Yeah. I mean, before
was
we even
totally
got there.
Was he totally unattractive to the women?
He looked like Ronnie Coleman with all the beer muscles he had.
Right.
Well, you got to think, we were out on the golf course at like noon, just sweating bullets all day out there. Yeah. And so, it's a very long day when you're playing on the links for that long. But yeah, that was the best. We were getting ready to go on to hole 18, and Drab's blowing my phone up. He's like, yo, I better see you at Jackson's, big dog. And, we saw it through. So when Drab gets hype, it just naturally rubs off.
Drab's not a big drinker. Did you get after it?
I should have hit the full self-driving probably on the way home. I had a good time. But, hey, Mike knows when to get out of there. I'll give Mike props. He is – like, there was a smoking – hot blonde chick there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Looked like
out of his league.
Out of everyone's leagues.
Out of, yeah,
it looked like an ASU girl, right? Mm-hmm. That you would just never talk to. Mike went up to her, handed her our two beers and said, "Can you hold these for us? We're gonna go have a smoke."
No,
and he just gave
no
this
way
hot chick our beers and walked off.
Because it's the ultimate, like, you know. Because then when you need the drinks back, you just
kind of disrespecting her.
He did. He checked her a little bit, and yes, then she was intrigued by him.
Exactly, right.
She was. She was asking his name.
Yeah, Mar's willing to go up to a girl even with dudes around.
Right.
I would never think about doing that.
Yeah, respect. That'll bode well for you in the future.
Did it pay dividends that night?
I'm no, sure not that night.
Hold on. Was he so drunk that he was unattractive to other people?
No, I don't think so. He has an ability.
He kept it together?
I mean, he was hooting and hollering, barking. And
yeah.
He was doing the...
he was doing the whoop, 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 whoop.
He always does the Indiana, hoo, oh, like over and over.
Why?
Again.
I don't
it's just,
know.
It's just random saying bits. I mean, it's just a lot of smoking and joking. But I was also doing this bit where, and Dragon Buddies were loving it, where I would be like, "This is something like the old Mike.
He said that about 1,000 times.
Really?
Sounds like boots were on the ground.
Yeah, oh, so yeah, many boots.
Boots were glued to the ground.
How many smoke breaks, Mike?
Just one.
Just one?
Yeah, we just went out there.
Did you get Drabby to partake?
I think I
had a couple drags.
I think so.
Do you like smoking while you're drinking, Drabby?
It's been years, bro. It's been years, but it was whatever.
It's in the moment.
I was getting so many boots on the ground DMs from listeners. They were loving it.
Yeah.
We all took a picture together.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But did you get recognized while you were out there?
The bartender.
The bartender.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
That's the best person to notice.
The best. Yeah.
Yeah. And then how long did it last before it fizzled out?
Mike grabbed me and said, "I'm ready to go."
Oh, really?
Back to the chalet. He calls his buddy's house the chalet.
Hey, we got a big chalet party coming up in a couple weeks, actually.
It's a nice house that they're renting out, but there's black mold everywhere.
No, there is.
It's the ultimate, like, 25-year-old spot. Yeah.
But that was just a start for you, because when I walked in with Mike Marr, he said it was the whole weekend, right? That's just the start Thursday.
Yeah, Thursday I was in Reston, so I left my house at noon to play golf on Thursday and didn't get back home until, like, 10 o'clock last night. I was in Leesburg for a night. Tyson's for a night. I went to a crazy pool party at a mansion on Saturday, and so it was just one thing after another. Big party in Leesburg on Friday for the 4th of July, but a lot of time to rest. I'll be here in Charlotte in a couple days, and Charlotte's, like, you know, my home away from home, you could say.
All right, what's going on in Charlotte?
I got a buddy that moved down there. I played football with in high school. He's, like, one of my best friends growing up. He moved down to Charlotte a year ago, so I visit him once a summer.
Yeah,
and then he'll come up for other vacations.
And then
what do you do?
What do you guys do down in Charlotte? Just go bar hopping?
Yeah, I mean, we'll just hang around a lot. I mean, he makes good money, so he just bought a house. So we're gonna get to check out the new digs and everything.
Nice. And, that liver's working overtime.
Yeah, I mean, what are you gonna give your liver a little break? You need a little EB break.
Yeah, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
He's young. Yeah, we'll bounce back.
I just got to hit a couple good workouts, get a good sweat in the next couple days, and then I'll right back on the horse.
Hit the sauna.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We might have to go back out to Reston this weekend. Maybe we'll go to Open Road, Jason.
Let me know.
Why this weekend?
It was fun.
He likes Reston.
You're back on it now?
Drab turned into a social butterfly now.
Yeah. Now, were you like chatting up people, or are you just like kind of making fun of Mar?
I just hang with the boys, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. You guys weren't just as a goof. Chatting up people.
I mean, I don't know. We were having a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
This might sound a little stupid, but like, I just didn't go out there a lot growing up. Like, Reston Town Center is maybe the gem of Northern Virginia.
Growing up,
there's a lot of spots there. There's quite a few spots you could get. Believe me, I've done it before. You could stumble from one spot to another.
Oh, definitely. And like, since moving to Arlington, I just really only go out in DC or Arlington. So now backtracking, hitting Reston. Sweet.
Right.
He's got a new spot.
It's a grown up place.
It's an older spot.
Yeah.
You know, it's suburban. It's a little bit of a different vibe, but you could definitely stumble from bar to bar there, restaurant to restaurant, whatever.
Yeah, I heard next time we're going out, I think all three of you guys and Cakes, yeah, we better see you there. Get the band back together.
We'll see. We should do it.
Well, he's got to have a drink.
We could twist Jason's arm.
Well, I mean, it's seven miles from my house.
I know.
I'll definitely meet you there for happy hour.
Didn't you hang out at the with the Bella twins there?
Oh, was that the rest of the town?
Oh, that was years ago.
I think so.
Yeah, that was 15 years ago. That was definitely Reston Town Center.
I think they've already been married and divorced.
Probably.
Since then. All right. Well, we need to set up a gig or two anyway, where we all go out and even, you know, invite listeners, do the whole thing.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, we're long overdue on that, actually.
Even if it's informal. I mean, the biddies should have came out and we should come out and hang out with us. More people, better.
I keep telling you, we should do something just to Pupatella. We all have our Pupatella gift cards.
Yeah.
We buy everybody a pizza. We go there and just like share our gift cards with people.
That's funny.
Hey, I did put up the Surfside poll of the day. We love Surfside iced tea and vodka. We love Surfside lemonade and vodka. They're the perfect addition to any gathering. Each can only 100 calories with zero carbonation for easy sipping. You can find Surfside at your local bars and in convenient variety 8-packs. At your local liquor stores, must be 21. Please drink responsibly. And the question, the poll of the day is, was this the right move by the Nationals to fire both GM Mike Rizzo and manager Davey Martinez? Right now, it's pretty split. You can vote at Junks Radio. Did the Nationals make the right move? We'll talk to Barry Zwerluga from the Washington Post coming up at 9 o'clock. So during one of the breaks, I walked by the break room and they've got the TVs on and it's on Fox 5, and they were showing clips from two concerts over the weekend. Did you happen to see the clips of Ozzy Osbourne?
Yes.
With Black Sabbath?
No, I mean, I saw a still picture, actually. I didn't see the clips.
So he's coming out on kind of a throne or something, and he was fine. Mm-hmm. Okay, he's 76 years old.
I mean, he's
77.
Got like Parkinson's. Like, he's
but
really
what jumped
up.
Out at me was the drummer behind him. Mm. The drummer behind him, I believe his name is Bill Ward. He's been the original drummer for Black Sabbath going back to 1968. He had no shirt on.
Oh, yeah. Did he look great?
No.
He looked terrible.
He looked like an 80-year-old. Average, 80-year-old.
It's amazing. Amazing. No. I
was that
tribute.
So that was local?
I think so.
Was it local?
I know
that Oasis was at RFK. Or not RFK, FedEx, whatever.
Northwest.
No, they were not.
Were they?
I was going to say.
I think they're playing
Cardiff.
In Cardiff.
Yeah, that was like their debut.
Their big
concert.
Comeback. Yeah.
Beyonce was
okay,
that.
They were showing that.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And Beyonce is there tonight. Isn't she at Northwest tonight?
She played a couple of shows. I know she was there the other night.
She's doing two nights. It's two nights, and tonight's the second night.
Yeah.
I just saw like the list of performers at Ozzy's thing. It was crazy. I mean, you had like, I think it was Ronnie Wood from the Rolling Stones there. I mean, Steven Tyler from Aerosmith. I mean, like, anybody you can imagine. All the drummers, like
Big
Travis
dogs.
Barker was there. The drummer from Red Hot Chili Peppers was there. All of them, you know, playing, you know, little tributes throughout. What a show they put on for Ozzy's final appearance. And then
but Bill Ward was out there with no shirt.
I didn't see. I'd love to see that. I actually thought they put a ton of makeup on Ozzy. Ozzy looked pretty good, I think, for as broken down as he is.
You wanna hear him do Paranoid, his last song?
Yeah, I'd love to. I have no idea how he sounded. I mean, I think to that crowd...
Sounds like an 80-year-old to me.
I think to that crowd, they're probably thrilled.
Yeah.
I think to them, Valdez, they're probably thrilled. I don't know. What do I know?
Kind of fine. I just thought it was funny that the drummer... And clearly, I botched the details. I just saw it real quick and I was walking by, but the drummer's back there with no shirt.
Right.
I was like, who is that old guy?
I don't know. They did a tribute where they had like three different drummers. Travis Barker, that guy, Chad Smith, and somebody else. I can't remember who it was. All playing at one time, just tributing him and Ozzy.
Yeah, honor him.
Yeah, what an incredible deal that was. I'm shocked they could wheel Ozzy out there and he could get through a concert. I think he only did four or five songs, at least of Sabbath or something. Mm-hmm. It was mostly other people, from what I could gather.
Cakes would have loved that show.
Yeah, he would have been all in.
All right, so Oasis, will they get through the whole tour, do you think? Isn't the whole thing that the brothers don't get along?
Well, didn't they come out like hand in hand? Like,
I thought it's a change relationship.
Yeah, they had their arms around each other. It looked electric. I mean, people have been waiting decades for this. A friend of mine, I think, spent $4,000 to fly from San Francisco over there.
You're kidding.
To go to get tickets for it.
What a waste.
Some people just, this is what they're, you know,
I guess what they live
meaning.
For.
Yeah.
It would not give me meaning. I don't think there's a artist on the planet I'd pay $4,000 for.
No, and I love Oasis, but I wouldn't pay $4,000 to go over there.
No, that's wild.
I saw
feel like
here.
You love them more than anybody. Did you actually see them in concert back in the
day? I saw them here. I saw them at the Patriots Center.
That's a great place. That's a small venue.
It was.
Did they say what caused the reconciliation? Was it like, is one of them get sober or something? And
they I think they both were big drinkers / addicts back in the day, but I don't
it's
know.
Time maybe, to drop a grudge. Jason yeah, maybe, should learn a lesson.
Maybe they're just matured.
Or is it just a money grab? Let's go back.
Well, I'm sure that's probably part of it.
A huge part.
But I have no idea. Even, I mean, look, there was a huge money grab 20 years ago, and they refused to play with each other. So it was bad.
They're apparently staying in separate hotels from one another.
Oh, they still need their distance?
Well, they said it's a good idea because we could maybe get sick of each other.
Yeah. Mm. All right. Well,
so it sounds like
sounds like me and Drab.
As long as they're getting along on the stage.
Right.
What is the I think they're going to MetLife Stadium. I think that's as close as they're going to get here. They're only doing like 5 or 6North American tour stops.
Yeah. Most of them are just over there in Europe.
Wow. And then if you wanted to go to MetLife, that's not going to cost you $4,000, though, right? That'll cost you.
Oh, no. I think just going to the first concert, one back.
That's what was so expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you said Beyonce was here?
Beyonce was here couple nights, but I think she performed on the 4th of July.
Has she been drawing a little bit better? Like, is that tour going okay?
Look, I just saw a photo that said, let the haters on the internet see this, and it was a sold-out stadium of Beyonce performing. But then I saw people kind of joning on her dance moves and saying it's over for her because she's 44 now.
Mm-hmm. Who did that happen to recently, too?
Well, Katy Perry.
Justin Timberlake.
Well, Timberlake. They were joning on a small dong, too. Like, remember he got caught in like that? He was on some device that was
like
lifting him up in the air. Yeah, you could see his little
like a harness. Harness.
They caught him in a terrible moment.
You can go see Oasis at MetLife for $427.
You would do that. That would be worth it. You would do that. You would do that. That'd be right at the limits, but you would do that.
About $500 a ticket with like the service fees and everything.
Yeah, you would do that. If you were a big fan, like you want to take your daughter.
Yeah, but then you got to find a hotel. And
I mean, it's a thing.
It's a $1,500
I think that's
trip.
Somewhat reasonable. I'm
it's not bad.
Pretty sure we paid more than that when my girls all went to go see Zach Bryan or whatever in Philly.
Yeah.
They paid something
similar to that. When is that show?
August 31st and September 1st. They're doing two nights.
Oof.
They're also in Chicago,
Labor Day weekend.
It looks like.
I tell you, Mark could relate to this. The Morgan Wallen double album, whatever that thing is, triple album, whatever that is definitely grown on me.
It's aging like wine.
It's just one of those things you got to grind through it, listen to it a bunch, and you just, you know, you start to find more and more favorites.
Yeah, and once you hear it on like a speaker or like somewhere loud, I swear it just sounds better than like listening to it on your headphones or whatever. I've come to realize that like just at the party I was at, it was blasting on the speaker and you're just learning the new songs, the ones that aren't super popular.
Right.
Great album.
It's a good listen. I listened to a lot of it while I was on the plane trying to sleep. I was thinking about JP. JP could just pass out on any airplane.
Oh, how was the sleep, by the way? Overall.
It's not at the desperation state it was when I left here. It's gotten some better, but like last night wasn't great at all. I've had a couple 3-hour stretches.
Well, the Sunday after a week off is always difficult.
It's true.
But what about in the hotel? Were you okay in the hotel?
It slowly got a little bit better, but I'm telling you, my best sleeping at this point is I can maybe get a 3-hour stretch, wake up, and then maybe once or twice I got another 3 hours.
Mm.
So like 2-3 hour stretches, which to me was like 10
that
hours.
That wasn't happening.
10 hours uninterrupted.
Yeah. My sleep was the polar opposite of Jason's this weekend. Now, I went to see Mission Impossible finally.
Mm-hmm.
It was online. It said that it was starting at 9:10. Mm. And I went with my son, and it's a 3-hour movie. It didn't start until 10:10. Mm. I don't know what the deal was because it said what it was online. But then when I got there, it was a totally different story. So we got out of there about 1:15 in the morning.
How was it?
I liked it. My son didn't like it. We were the only two people in the theater.
Oh, no. Oh,
the Lord. Only two. Oh, I mean, it's been out for a while.
Have they upgraded it on our box, or is it still the hurting, like, Russian
cheap copy?
Yeah.
You got a CF1 in the theater. I saw it on Saturday night or whatever night. Who knows?
Did you love it?
Nights. I loved it.
Was it really good?
I loved it. It's just one of those great theater movies. Yeah. It's not the greatest story in the world. Nothing's going to blow you away, but it's fast car.
Like visual effects.
Awesome Hans Zimmer soundtrack. Just keeps you engaged the entire time. It was 2.5 hours. Felt like 20 minutes.
That's how I felt about Mission Impossible. It's just the music and everything. And then, you know, Tom running around like he always does.
I got to ask my buddy who went to the F1. Where was it? Is it in Belgium or something? Where was it recently?
This past weekend, it was Silverstone.
I don't know. Wherever my buddy was.
Britain.
Wherever he was.
Yeah.
And he sent me some videos of the car zooming by. All right. That's cool. But what do you do? Like, how long is it? Like, when they zoom, how often are they zooming by?
Like, oh, every few seconds because they space out.
They space out pretty good?
Yeah.
I just didn't know what you do sitting there to look. Like, what do you do? Like, what are you looking for? Are you looking for wrecks?
Waiting for wrecks, I guess. Yeah.
I guess.
There's
I didn't really understand.
But it was raining.
Appreciating the speed.
It was raining, so actually there were a lot of wrecks yesterday.
There were?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Coming up next, Barry Zwalluga is going to join us from the Washington Post. He had a back and forth via text with Mike Rizzo, who, of course, was fired, the GM of the Nationals. Davey Martinez also out. You can vote on our poll of the day at Junks Radio on Twitter. Did the Nationals make the right move by firing both Davey and Mike Rizzo? We'll talk to Zwalluga next here on the Junkies.